Hello, listeners. I'm Claire Gilbert.
I'm Hannah Genowine, and you're listening to Slice of PI. We take stories from around Mary Lou Fulton Teachers College and showcase the awesome things that our faculty, staff, and students are doing to make our college and community a better place through principled innovation, including all of the messiness that comes along with change-making. This is the second part of our piece on the Student Success Team. Last time we talked about the changes they made to their team structure to better support students, but we came away with a story that was very much polished and shiny.
But guess what, world? That's not how change works. There's an entire other side to the story dealing with the unintended consequences of the changes that the Student Success Team made, and we sat down again with Erica Mitchell, the Executive Director for Student Services, to talk about it. When you started implementing changes in the Student Success Team and after you started changing the structure of everything, what were some of the outcomes that you saw immediately?
So you heard about all the wonderful things in the development of the Student Success Team, but I think it's important to also focus on the fact that it was incredibly messy. I felt as if people would feel supported in an organization that working in that gray area, that they could learn to manage that and navigate it. But the truth is that that creates more anxiety amongst the team. It can lead to employees stepping on each other's toes because folks are really trying to understand their place.
A big challenge for Erica and her team was navigating the uncertainty and ambiguity of innovating. Many challenges surface with this team because they were constantly working in the gray.
Completely creating a new team from scratch means obviously creating new positions on a team. Jobs that haven't existed before, and roles that haven't been there previously. And that makes for a lot of growing pains. Redesigning things doesn't come with a handy guidebook or a list of rules for how to make things better. And people usually aren't prepared for it or comfortable with it.
You think about that it would be easy to have people working together on a team for a common goal, and that's also not necessarily true. That can be really bumpy, and trying to navigate through that when folks don't necessarily know what their role is because these are new positions. So, okay, you put on the job description that this role should do X, but what does that mean in action? You know, what does that look like? And so one of the things looking back that I think was critical in developing this team was really developing a purpose and a vision and making sure that we always went back to the why. Why did we create this team? What is its function? What is its purpose? So every time we were faced with a challenge, faced with unknown, uncharted territory, we had to step back and we had to say, hey, you know, okay, does this align with our vision? Does this align with our mission? And if it doesn't, then it's just noise.
Ding, ding, ding. Hannah, I feel like we should ring a bell every time Erica mentions one of the practices of principled innovation. Okay, so one of the practices of PI, and there are eight if you'll recall, talks about identifying and acknowledging fundamental values. That means determining what values are important to a team. What's the point of the work they're doing and why does it matter?
It took a lot of self-reflection. It took a lot of one-on-one with each of the individual team members. Again, something that I wasn't anticipating, the amount of time and just listening. I would say that was a key factor, is listening to hear what people are saying. And so that's what I did for I feel like a year, as I sat back and I listened to what people were saying and tried to really understand what they were saying and reading between the lines. And then refocusing and going back again to, okay, well, does this fit our purpose and our vision of student success?
If we look back to our first episode, the whole reason the Student Success Team was created was to increase retention rates within the college up to 90%.
But the team has evolved so far from there. What we found is the need is so much greater than freshman retention.
One thing Erica and her team didn't see coming was the great need for their team in the college. It soon became clear that what started as a change to retain more freshmen rapidly expanded to the entire college of students who also needed the same support and resources, not just undergrads, but also graduate students.
This was a jump from around 500 students to nearly 6,000. Erica and the Student Success Team realized that in order to enact real change, they needed a more holistic vision and approach to support the overall wellness of students.
It really took a lot of collaboration and working with faculty and strategizing with the faculty in terms of how can faculty who are with students every day provide a positive impact and help us meeting our retention goals so that In terms of human resources, we have faculty working to support retention goals and then also the student success team. But the student success team can be focused on the areas of expertise that they have.
Basically, they wanted to maximize the effort each person on the student success team could provide in their areas of expertise, while also utilizing faculty to help reach their retention goals. It's like what Jeff said about the members of the student success team. Each person comes in and helps the students in the areas that they are trained to help with, and asks another member of the team to step in when something they are not trained to address comes up.
We realized very, very quickly that having one financial coach was not enough, that the demand for students needing help financially greatly exceeded one coach's ability. And that was something we had to step back and revisit, and we needed to collect the data and see. But we also had to be cautious to say, are we providing a service to our students that is duplicative of what financial aid is doing? So we had to really evaluate, what is it that we're doing? And again, we had to go back to our root of what's unique about our student success team is that we are working to support student success for future educators. That is not a service that's provided in the university. So when we're serving students and we're providing, you know, counseling, advising, expertise, it should be based on the fact that they are an educator. And our services and support should form around that.
Another thing the student success team did is that they rolled out the SOS system, which we mentioned in the previous episode. SOS stands for supporting our students, and usually a faculty member would submit one to let the student success team know that there was a student that needed extra support. However, Erica mentioned that there was no one to triage these, that there wasn't any one person looking at an SOS and figuring out the next step to help that student. Within a month of their launching, the student success team had over 200 SOSs that had been submitted.
We didn't know what to do with them because then, well, who looks at the SOS form? Who decides what the outreach is? And then multiple people were outreaching. So if we have 5 or 6 members of the success team and we get an SOS that the faculty member says, yep, they need mental health support, they need financial support, they need wellness, everyone on the team is reaching out. And then the unintended consequence of that was the student feels overwhelmed because 5 or 6 people have reached out. Mm-hmm. So how can we make sure that our efforts are coordinated? And that resulted in redesigning one of our academic coaches' roles into, because she had a background in wellness, into this triage.
So now, think of form this coordinated care around the student, making sure they bring the resources together in a more coordinated way so as not to overwhelm the student. One person reaches out to the student, asks to talk with the student, and figures out how to address the underlying problems that that student is facing.
And so, again, that was something when we initially launched this group, thinking, oh, we have all these support and resources that we didn't realize it would be overwhelming to students because they didn't know where to start and they didn't know what support to get. And often the referral that was coming in was not actually addressing the fundamental problem that they had. So we might get students that are referred for academic issues, but then you realize this isn't a student that has an issue with math. This student has an issue with anxiety. This student has an issue with self-confidence. So getting the math tutoring isn't going to solve the problem. We have to focus on negative self-talk and strategies that can help the student be more successful in those areas. So that's really in sort of launching this team, like I said, where it sounded great. These are a lot of the unintended things where you sit back and you think, oh my gosh, how did I miss that? How did I not think about that?
So they got feedback from students about their experiences with the student success team. And they said things like, it's great, but I'm overwhelmed with the number of people reaching out to me while I'm in the midst of student teaching. Erica and her team realized how valuable it is to make sure that there is clear communication between team members when reaching out to students.
My advice is really have a lot of check-ins and don't just assume that you have a wonderful idea, because sometimes you'll be surprised to hear that that's not how it's received by others. And the same goes for even the employees on the team. I would say checking in with them, because sometimes you can think that you have a great idea and that the team is going to be on board, but they bring up situations and issues and questions that you think, gosh, You know, I didn't think about it that way.
Erica had to employ a lot of organizational change management techniques to help her team members navigate the changes that were occurring, while also taking a step back to see the broader team from the multiple perspectives of each role. This allowed Erica to make informed and ethical decisions moving forward that would benefit every person on the team.
One of the things that I think is unique to ASU is the pace in which we move and the speed of change. And that is incredibly difficult to both manage successfully manage successfully and also be able to react to and communicate effectively when you're working at that pace of change. And I think that's unique to the ASU culture.
Erica said that the number of touch points you have with your team needs to increase more than you would ever think. Not micromanaging your team, but having touch bases to make sure the purpose and vision of your work is still intact and clear. Like she said earlier, it's easy to become distracted by the noise. The student success team reported 2 to 3 levels below Erica, but it was necessary for her to be at every single weekly meeting during the first year, to hear what was happening, the challenges students were facing and employees were facing, and to reset their vision.
One of the things that I started doing as well within this last year that the team has told me has been incredibly helpful and has increased the communication and helping to reset and drive that purpose of why is I have strategic monthly meetings with each of the team members. And what we talk about is, okay, this is the vision for the role of wellness coaching. Let's talk about how that's playing out and what direction we're moving. And what are the challenges that you're experiencing and what can I do to help you overcome those challenges?
And one of the things that came up in these one-on-one meetings frequently was how big of a challenge working together was proving to be.
For example, given that the student success team is new, they didn't know where the advising boundary was drawn when you were an academic advisor and when a coaching line was drawn. They didn't know the boundaries between when a faculty should be involved and when a coach should be involved.
What they had to do is say, what's the difference? What's the difference between an advisor and a coach, a financial aid advisor and a coach, an ASU counselor and a wellness coach? And they sat down and made grids and charts that noted the differences. Erica made the team sit back and reflect so they could develop the vision of their role, but also be able to articulate both to themselves and others what the differences were.
And as soon as they started to articulate themselves what the difference was, it actually enabled them and empowered them to move forward with this vision of what they did in a coaching role. Because it was very ambiguous to them, even though I had spoken the words and they would nod their heads and agree that this is what we're on board to do. They didn't really conceptually understand until we sat down and we said, no, this is your lane. This is an advising lane. And so sometimes toes got stepped on, right? And not any, malicious way. It was really people were trying to figure out what to do.
In Erica's mind, it was clear the difference between each of the roles and their responsibilities, but that wasn't the case. Erica found herself explaining the difference between an advisor or a coach at least twice a month throughout these changes to create a more cohesive team.
Looking back on this, if I were to redo that, I would have educated myself more in how to get people to work on teams with distributed expertise and had more trainings and understood that aspect more. Because I think that could have helped onboard the team and the coaches better had I had more of that knowledge.
Erica also mentioned what's next for the student success team looking ahead. She really hopes they can reorganize the team to make the structure more effective.
One of the gaping holes that I see right now at the current moment is really focusing on underrepresented students. And I don't just mean, race or ethnicity. I'm talking about every aspect of diversity. Males in the teacher college, an underrepresented population. Students with, different abilities in the college, you know, those are all underrepresented populations in terms of the educator role. And so what are we doing to serve student needs and really focus our services on helping those students to be successful?
How can they serve the students whose voices aren't being heard? How can they support transfer students who aren't making it into the program because there were just too many obstacles to get there?
How can they reevaluate the services they have to better support students? This is what the Student Success Team is focusing on this fall. She also wants to focus on the overall student experience, both for undergrads and graduate students.
From the beginning, when they're enrolled, what does that interaction look like? What is the message that we're providing during the program? What is the student's experience like? So I have each of the coaches and the advisors going through term by term. So if we look at, you know, each semester that a student is in the program, what is our intentional and strategic messaging around a student that's in term one versus a student that's in term seven, or a graduate student, or an online student?
Another goal they have is looking at and analyzing the interactions their team has with students using data and feedback to inform their strategy and decision-making around proactively alleviating stressors to enhance their experience from semester to semester.
Change is hard for people, and don't underestimate that change is difficult for folks to manage. However, it's also incredibly exciting and allows for opportunity to create successes and impact people's lives in ways that you never thought were possible. So although it's scary and messy and hard work, that in the end of the day, it's really important to pause and think about all of the wonderful things that have happened because of it, because sometimes we get so short-sighted that we forget the long-term impact. And so sometimes it's good to invite others that are outside that circle that you're working in to see the work that you're doing, because it gives you a different perspective and allows you to reset and say, wow, this was really cool. This is a great opportunity. Look at how it's supporting student success. Because it's easy to get lost in the minutiae of change. And it's easy to feel change fatigue. And it's easy to feel overwhelmed and stressed. And there's been many days where I want to throw up my hands and quit and walk away and say, this isn't worth it. But what I always come back to is, no, you can't do that. This isn't easy. It's not easy, and anything worth doing is hard. And so you have to remember that you're making positive change and that you're helping people, and you have to constantly step back and have that positive reflection and have people that help you remember that. Because if you don't, you're going to get lost into this messiness and want to quit. But, you know, reflecting really helps you remember what's important.
Thanks for listening to Slice of PI. Stay tuned for more stories of principled innovation in action.
Thanks to Erica Mitchell for sitting down with us again. If you have an idea for a podcast or want to reach out regarding Slice of PI, drop us a line at podcast.mlftc@asu.edu. Until next time.